Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
What if, like aspirin for a headache, there were a pill to treat COVID? Stand by. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC. Mask backlash. Confusion shifts to anger after the CDC changes guidelines.
Take the masks off our children.
The impact on schools across the country. President Biden to announce vaccine requirements for federal employees. His new order to get a shot or submit to weekly testing. Simone Biles pulls out of the individual all-around. The cause and the GOAT's decision to shine a big light on her own mental health.
Her being able to do this, I think, just really shows what she wants to do moving forward.
No crabs, no scallops, big labor problems, why our seafood is disappearing from restaurants, and the shellfish making people really sick. A deadly shooting in a movie theater. Uber Eats now delivering flowers. And the UK opening its doors to vaccinated Americans.
Live from CNBC. The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
And good evening. A live look coming at the Olympic torch burning over Tokyo. Our primetime coverage continues in the next hour with cycling and archery. But all the talk today is about who's not in the competition. Simone Biles bowing out of the individual all around. Tonight, reaction and support from some of the biggest names in sports and beyond. Plus, we'll hear live from a man who worked with Simone Biles and other top athletes on their mental health challenges. And before tonight's fencing quarterfinals, the story of a gold medalist in this year's games who almost threw in the towel. But we begin tonight with the widespread confusion and backlash a day after the CDC reversed its mask guidance. The agency now telling some fully vaccinated Americans they need to once again wear face coverings indoors. The debate heating up across the country, from local school board meetings to the halls of Congress. The Capitol's attending physician says House lawmakers now need to mask up, vaccinated or not. But that requirement does not apply in the Senate. Different rules for different chambers in the same building. Today, Speaker Nancy Pelosi insulted the House leader, Kevin McCarthy, by calling him a moron. After he said the decision to bring back masks is not based on science.
Leader McCarthy says it's against the science.
She's loading.
McCarthy fired back saying D.C. is not a hot spot and accused Speaker Pelosi of doing this for control. One of his members, the Republican Congressman Chip Roy, took it a step further and protested the new mask mandate by forcing a vote to adjourn the House.
Which is it? Vaccines or masks? Do the vaccines work or they don't work? Do the masks work so they don't work? I'd like to know which it is. If you've been infected with a virus, do you have immunity? Or are they just going to go around poking people saying you must take a vaccine? Oh, but sorry, the vaccine doesn't work. You must wear a mask.
Well, it works, and it's not complicated. More political fallout could come tomorrow. President Biden expected to announce his administration will require federal workers to be vaccinated or else they'll have to get tested regularly. On the business front, Facebook and Google just announced they'll mandate vaccines for all workers going into offices. Google CEO also pushed back the company's official return to office date over concerns about COVID Delta. We have coverage from all angles tonight. Valerie Castro on the backlash over the CDC's mask guidance in schools. We'll hear from the former FDA commissioner, Dr. Scott Gottlieb. But first, to NBC's Peter Alexander at the White House on the push for vaccine mandates.
Shep, tomorrow President Biden's expected to mandate all civilian federal employees be vaccinated or submit to strict COVID protocols. Officials here tell NBC News that those who do not show proof of vaccination would have to be tested frequently and wear masks. It's a dramatic reversal for the president, who just months ago said that he did not believe the vaccine should be mandatory. The White House also now ordering mask mandates inside federal buildings, even for the vaccinated, in places where the virus's spread is high. That applies right here in D.C. The Pentagon doing the same. Republicans have pounced on the shifting messaging. The top Republican, Kevin McCarthy, and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi trading sharp words after the chief doctor on Capitol Hill announced a mask mandate for the House, but not for the Senate, due to rising COVID cases here in Washington. McCarthy saying it's not based on science. Pelosi calling McCarthy a moron. President Biden wore a mask when he got back to the White House tonight. But earlier in Pennsylvania, touting manufacturing, he was maskless. The county he was in has a lower COVID rate. The CDC guidance does not call for mask wearing there. Still, this debate and the confusion is creating new challenges for the president, who just weeks ago declared this the summer of freedom for the vaccinated. Shep.
Peter, thanks. As I reported, the CDC now urging everybody in K through 12 schools to mask up indoors, vaccinated or not, students, teachers, staff, and visitors. But whether individual schools actually follow that guidance could depend largely on where they are. So far, at least 9 states have banned school districts from issuing mask mandates. You see them here: Vermont, South Carolina, Iowa, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, Arizona, Georgia, and Utah. On the debate over masks in schools, here's CNBC's Valerie Castro.
No way. You are not masking our children.
The debate is raging all over the country, and parents are making their opinions well known.
I don't think anyone's thinking logically anymore. I think they've just let this really just run crazy with these with masks. It's over. We don't need it anymore.
Districts issued their own policies last school year, and Bucks County, Pennsylvania, was mask optional. But on Tuesday, a protest broke out at a press conference held by parents who say the spread of the Delta variant, along with the CDC's new guidance, is enough to make this year mask mandatory.
In another couple of weeks, it is likely to be even worse.
But others say a repeat of masks in the classroom will be detrimental. Stafford County, Virginia, is considering a full mandate.
My eighth grader this past year went into a deep spiral depression because of virtual learning and because of masks when we went back to school.
Not only did we suffer the deep depression, we suffered severe germophobia. I can't even touch him. I can't even hug my child unless he's about to go take his shower.
In Leon County, Florida, the district is sticking to masks optional, despite opposition from many, including this teacher.
What are our students, teachers, staff, and community worth? Will we look back on this year and say we did everything we could to keep them safe, or ask why didn't we mask? Why didn't we act when we had the chance?
School officials find themselves endlessly caught in the controversy.
But when we have colliding forces from the federal government to the state government to from the CDC to our local departments of health, we're trying to navigate all of those forces.
Some districts say they are waiting a few more weeks to decide what their masking policies will be. Others caution that any decision made now could change with updates to CDC guidance throughout the school year. And economists have cautioned that any disruption to schools risks hurting women's return to the workforce, since they often take on the brunt of childcare responsibilities. There are 1.8 million fewer women in the workforce now, Shep, than before the pandemic started.
Wow. Valerie, thank you. Dr. Scott Gottlieb now, former FDA commissioner, author of the book Uncontrolled Spread. He's also on the boards of Pfizer and Illumina and a CNBC contributor, for which we're thankful. Doctor, at least 9 states have already banned mask mandates in their schools. Broadly, are you concerned the new CDC mask guidelines will have no impact?
Well, look, I think in terms of mandating that or recommending that people who are vaccinated need to wear masks again, I think what could be more valuable to people who are vaccinated is just practical guidance on what it means to be vaccinated and what their individual risk is. Being vaccinated substantially reduces people's risk that they have a bad outcome, that they'll be hospitalized, or have a severe case of COVID. But it doesn't make you impervious to infection. What we're seeing with the Delta variant is it's so highly contagious. There are some breakthrough cases where people who are vaccinated are developing mild or asymptomatic infections and probably have the ability to pass on that infection. So if you're vaccinated and you become symptomatic, don't assume that you don't have COVID. And if you're caring for young children or people who could be at risk, you should get yourself checked out and maybe consider wearing a mask when you're around people who are at risk. So I think if we gave practical guidance to people who are vaccinated, that would probably be more valuable than trying to re-implement a mandate that people who are vaccinated wear masks.
That sneeze was not COVID, for the record. Doctor, you said you think we're further along with this Delta variant wave than we realized. If you could elaborate, I'd appreciate it. And given that, are we overdoing this, given that you've said you think we're close to done?
Well, look, I think we're in the thick of it right now, but I think we're not picking up a lot of infections. There's probably a lot of infections happening right now. Our ascertainment rate, meaning the number of infections that we're actually diagnosing, probably is around 1 in 10. During the height of the epidemic in the winter, when we had very good testing in place, we were picking up probably 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 infections. Right now, a lot of people aren't going out and seeking testing. And when they do seek testing, they do it at home with antigen-based tests like the Binax. Those results don't necessarily get reported. So if you're vaccinated and you develop a mild cold, you don't think you have COVID, so you're not going out and getting tested. And a lot of the infections, since we vaccinate a lot of the more vulnerable population, older individuals who are more likely to become symptomatic, a lot of the infection right now is happening among a younger cohort who are less likely to develop very severe symptoms. So they're less likely to think that they have COVID and seek out testing. The people generally who are getting tested are those who get very sick or those who develop some telltale symptoms of COVID, like loss of taste or smell. But that's probably just a small fraction of the overall infection. So I think the amount of infection that we have taking place in this country is a lot higher. And maybe we're closer to the peak, particularly in some of the southern states. When you look at the South, you look at states like Arkansas, Missouri, Louisiana, the epidemic is still expanding in those states, but the rate of expansion is slowing. And that's a sign that they may be reaching a peak in those states.
So you think we may be on the downslope from this when?
Probably in 2 or 3 weeks. I think that we were probably about 3 weeks behind the UK. The UK clearly is on a downslope. They've seen an uptick in the last day, but they've seen a sustained trend over the last week of declining cases. I would expect some of the southern states that really were the epicenter of this epidemic to start rolling over in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Now, the problem is that this is a big country, and we're going to see the epidemic sweep across the country in different portions at different times. And so the Northeast and northern states will start to see more Delta spread as the South comes out of this. With the UK, it really revolves around what happens in London. Here in this country, it's going to be much more regionalized. Now, I don't expect the density of the spread of Delta in states like New York or Michigan to be what it was in the South. We have more vaccine coverage up there. We've had more prior infection. But you will see an uptick in cases, even in states where there's a lot of vaccine coverage, probably just not as severe.
On the main, that's good news. Doctor, thank you. Another quest for gold on hold. Simone Biles once again benches herself. New insight into what happened midair that caused her to take a break. As she adds her name to the list of athletes prioritizing their mental health. Next, a mental health training expert who worked with Simone Biles and others. She'll join us live on the news. For other members of Team USA, the fight for top medals continues. Highlights from swimming and men's basketball. Are they finally back on track? And the economy withstanding the threat of the Delta variant as the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, weighs in on inflation.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tokyo 2020, and Simone Biles will not compete in her sport's marquee event, the individual all-around, so that she can focus on her mental health. In a statement, Team USA Gymnastics announced it wholeheartedly supports Simone's decision and applauds her bravery in prioritizing her well-being. Her courage shows yet again why she is a role model for so many. Yesterday, Simone Biles shocked the world by pulling out of the gymnastics team event. She said she's physically fine, but that mentally, she just wasn't in the right headspace. The twisters, they call it. It's when gymnasts lose their sense of space in midair, the twisties. Look at Biles' eyes here, right before she lands on the mat during her last vault jump. Today, she got support from gymnastics great Dominique Moceanu. At the 1996 Games in Atlanta, she had to push through a tibial stress fracture during the team competition, which led her to fall directly on her head during her balance beam routine. Moceanu applauded Biles for having a say in her own health, a say she says she never had when she competed. Moceanu then wrote, "In our sport, we essentially dive into a pool with no water. When you lose your ability to find the ground, which appears to be part of Biles' decision, the consequences can be catastrophic. She made the right decision for the team and herself." Michael Phelps also sending his support. In an interview today, the greatest swimmer of all time said he knows how Biles feels.
"We carry a lot of things, a lot of weight on our shoulders. And it's challenging, especially when we have the lights on us and all of these expectations that are being thrown on top of us."
And other Olympians have spoken out as well about their mental health struggles. Biles' former teammate and ally, Allie Raceman, says that she went to therapy after team doctor Larry Nassar sexually abused her. The basketball star Kevin Love admitted he had several panic attacks during his career. And the tennis star Naomi Osaka said that she needed to take a two-month break from all that attention. Full Olympics coverage now. Mental training expert Robert Andrews on the Simone Biles situation. But first, NBC's Tom Yamas, live from the gymnastics arena in Tokyo. Tom, how's Biles doing?
Well, Shep, we know she's taking all of this day by day, but she is keeping us guessing. Just last night, she was actually here in the Ariake Gymnastics Center cheering on the men in their all-around final. Now, this is a surprise because she's dealing with so much right now. The entire world is focused on her, and yet she takes the time out to come back here where that incident happened on the vault to cheer on her fellow teammates. Tonight, the women's all-around final. This is the event she just recently pulled out of, and it's one that she won in Rio 4 years ago. She won the gold medal, so she would have been the defending champion here. Jade Carey from Team USA is now replacing her. She will compete tonight, along with Suni Lee. Now, Suni Lee qualified, and she was ranked third, so she has a very good shot at a medal tonight, possibly even a gold medal. And I got to tell you, Shep, I won't be surprised if Simone Biles is here again tonight, rooting on her teammates. I had a chance to speak to a few of them who told us on that night, the night the vault incident happened, they were shocked. They had noticed something was a little off maybe a week ago when they first practiced in this arena, but they said it was Simone Biles. You know, she's the GOAT and she always performs. But they say they will support her no matter what she does, whether her Olympics here in Tokyo are completely over or if she's going to take the time, she can regroup and compete again. It's her choice. They're going to support her either way. But that's the big question right now. What does Simone Biles do? She's taking her time, and Team USA and USA Gymnastics is going to give her that time, Shep.
Tom Yamas, thank you. Let's turn to Robert Andrews now, mental health training expert, director of the Institute of Sports Performance in Houston. Right now, Robert's working with four Olympians on mental health conditioning. And he worked with Simone Biles for 4 years until 2017. Robert, can't thank you enough. Simone reportedly has the twisties, meaning she's lost her sense of where she is while she's tumbling. How common is that, and what do you do about it?
Well, first of all, I'm working with athletes from four countries, not four athletes, so I just wanted to correct that. The twisties and how you correct it, it's a symptom of the brain being overwhelmed with too much stress, pressure, and anxiety. There's a long list of stressors that are pushing in on her. And so what you've got to do is do your best to resolve those stressors and calm the brain and nervous system back down again, because in essence, the brain is saying it's not safe enough for you to do these incredibly difficult skills. And if you do, you're at serious risk of injuring yourself. So she's wise to listen to her brain and her body.
Hmm. Olympians have always been under so much pressure, but this generation has social media. What role does that play in all of this?
90% of it plus is 90%. Really, really good. People love her and support her, but there's that dark side of it that we're starting to see come up now. A lot of hate, a lot of rudeness, a lot of cruelty. Unfortunately, that's the world we live in right now. So if I was talking to Simone, I would tell her to even delete some of these apps from her phone if that's what she needed to do to distance herself from the dark side of social media.
Not a bad idea for a lot of us. Michael Phelps has talked about the mental health challenges after his games. No more spotlight, no more competition. How can Olympians battle that?
It's a huge process, and I've helped a number of them through it over the years. It's not just the limelight and the attention. It's the rigors of day in and day out training and that year after year commitment and being with teammates and competition and pushing yourself to acquire new skills or swim faster. When that structure is gone, it's kind of like, who am I now? And that loss of identity and connection to that sport is difficult. So I always try to help them find something to channel that passion into. And those that are able to do that have a very successful transition.
Have you heard from Simone?
I have not. I've heard from her father, but not Simone.
Well, we're wishing her all the best, as I know you are. Robert Andrews, thanks so much. For the rest of Team USA, the hunt for gold continues. Katie Ledecky made Olympic history by winning gold in the first ever women's 1500-meter freestyle. Her victory came a little more than an hour after she missed a medal. Look at that. Missed a medal in the 200-meter. And for the first time in more than a century, Great Britain wins a relay gold medal in the Olympic pool. Team USA didn't make the podium after star swimmer Caleb Dressel was excluded from that relay. And U.S. men's basketball finally got their first win in Tokyo. Today they crushed Iran, almost doubling them up. 120-66, the final. Kevin Durant and the gang set to face the Czech Republic on Saturday. So here's where the medal count stands right now. Team USA leading with a total of 31. China's in second with 27, and that Russian Olympic Committee with 23. While the games are in full swing, COVID continues to be a major problem in Tokyo. In fact, it's growing. Officials there say rising infections are pushing hospitals to the brink. Today, Tokyo reported more than 3,000 new cases. That is the most on any day since the beginning of the pandemic. Uber Eats, smelling the roses, and taking on a new challenge. Flower delivery, the big business behind the decision and where it's already blooming. Ransomware attacks crippling companies and costing millions. Tonight, what we're learning about the true cost of hacking before a single penny is paid out.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Uber Eats branching out into the flower delivery business. The app is teaming up with Pro Flowers to start delivery today. It's available in six cities: New York, Philly, Chicago, Los Angeles, Dallas, Miami. The company reports it's planning to roll out the service nationwide early next year. And this move comes after a surge in business for delivery apps during the pandemic, a surge that hasn't slowed at all as businesses reopen. CNBC's Christina Partsenevelis is here. Christina?
Well, get your groceries in less than 15 minutes. Order warm cookies to your door until 2 a.m. Now, flowers are in the mix, just as Shep mentioned. You can order anything from sushi, pet food, or a bottle of Pepto-Bismol. Delivery fees vary from 50 cents to $4 if you get something from 7-Eleven. Prices were the same as in store. And I can say this because even I tried to order some random items today. Unfortunately, those orders were replicated and duplicated many times, and the fees racked up, which is a key source of income for the drivers, the app companies, and the businesses themselves. Profit margins on much of these products are thin, but an increase in offerings can bring in customers.
It is more about like long-term customer retention. I don't think in individual product sale, they're going to make much profit.
Although non-restaurant delivery accounts for only about 5% of sales of both Uber Eats and DoorDash, it's only expected to grow.
Every company is growing, which tells you that either they are adding more dollars to their checks that they are getting from a user, or they're adding more users to their system.
Competition is fierce. Over the last 10 months, ending in early May, DoorDash is the most popular app, followed by Uber Eats and then Grubhub. A growing reliance on delivery services caused by a year of lockdowns has helped spawn an urban industry of rapid delivery. And businesses like Uber and DoorDash believe customers who want convenience will keep paying up. And Shep, I brought you a gift because as I messed up today, I ordered many bottles of this product here. And yeah, there you go.
Well, five-symptom relief.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
To my team. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A deal now reached on a multi-billion dollar infrastructure deal. Money for roads and bridges and drinking water. Brand new. A vote in the Senate tonight. Will it bring the back and forth to an end? A TikTok star shot inside a movie theater. Another teenager dead. New tonight, an arrest. But police admit there are still a lot of questions. And Pfizer pours money into a pill to treat COVID as England welcomes back U.S. travelers. That's next, as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on CNBC. The latest from the Fed on rate hikes and inflation, and that's what's topping CNBC on the Money. The Federal Reserve leaving interest rates unchanged and near zero today. The chairman, Jerome Powell, saying the Fed's nowhere near considering a rate hike and inflation will not last. Powell adding that the economy continues to strengthen despite the COVID concerns. Former President Obama teaming up with NBA Africa to expand the league's presence on the continent. He'll have a minority ownership stake in the deal and use the money to help fund his foundation's youth and leadership programs there, he says. The NBA Africa League debuted in May. And the iconic Campbell's soup can getting a makeover for the first time in 50 years. The new label on the right here, keeping its famous red and white colors, but the logo no longer has that shadow, and the font changed just a bit. Seems to be a picture, too. The new cans rolling out on store shelves right now. On Wall Street, the Dow down 128, S&P down 1, but the NASDAQ up 102. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. It's the most expensive fighter jet ever built for the U.S. military. But price doesn't equal performance. A congressional committee wants answers from the Pentagon. America's restaurants battling a major seafood crisis. Why certain items are vanishing from menus everywhere. And the next big thing in the fight against COVID. A COVID pill. It's the antiviral that would help fight the virus during the early stages of the infection. It's the next potential breakthrough that could help the United States curb this steadily increasing number of cases while relieving stress on hospitals. Pharma companies, including Pfizer, are betting big money behind this effort. CNBC's Meg Terrell covers science and medicine, and she's here for us. Hi, Meg.
Hey, Shep, Pfizer today saying that the early data on its drug look promising, and it's making a pledge to invest in ramping up manufacturing of the pill even before knowing whether it works. CEO Albert Bourla telling us he just authorized an investment of $1 billion in the program.
We are going full speed with all trials in parallel for this antiviral. And we are manufacturing at risk. We made commitments that we will pay all the suppliers. So they are providing now raw materials. We are building the equipment and we will manufacture it. Hopefully, it will be successful for the world.
Now, Pfizer started a pivotal trial of the drug this month and expects to have results potentially to file for emergency use authorization by the end of the year. It's testing the drug in combination with another antiviral, both pills taken twice a day for 5 days. The goal, keep people with COVID from getting so sick they have to go to the hospital. Now, of course, it's not the only company working on a pill for the disease. Others are in development from drug makers Merck and Atea Pharmaceuticals. Merck has already struck a big supply agreement with the U.S. government if it's cleared by the FDA. Now, the companies, they're also testing the drugs to see if they could prevent COVID in people who have been exposed. And beyond being a pill, another potential upside to these drugs is if they work, they're expected to hold up across different variants of the virus.
That Chad? Is great news. Meg, thanks. Fully vaccinated Americans can once again visit England without having to quarantine. It starts next week. Government officials there made the announcement today. It comes just a week after the CDC and the State Department told Americans to avoid travel to the UK because of rising COVID cases. But now infections there are dropping fast. It's a hopeful sign that the UK's latest surge, fueled by the Delta variant, may have passed its peak. In London, here's NBC's Ali Aruzi.
Hey, Shep. Well, it just got a lot easier for US travelers to come to England as long as they've been double jabbed. The government here announced that as of Monday, the 2nd of August, travelers from the United States and the European Union will no longer have to quarantine for 10 days upon arrival in the UK, as long as they've had two doses of a vaccine that's been approved by the FDA or the European medicines agencies. Prime Minister Boris Johnson said that he wants US citizens to come to the UK freely again as they did before the pandemic, and he wants families to be able to reunite more easily. So the rules are now that if you have had a double vaccine, you can come to the UK as long as you do a PCR test before leaving the United States and you do a PCR test 2 days after arrival. If those both those tests are negative, your movements won't be restricted. But like all things COVID, there's a caveat. If the situation here gets worse, those rules could change at a moment's notice. Shep?
Ali, thanks. Another Major League Baseball game postponed after a COVID outbreak. Nats and Phillies will not take the field tonight. The Nats manager says 12 people connected to the team have been put on COVID protocols. Four of them are players, including the shortstop Trey Turner, who had to leave last night's game in the first inning after he tested positive for COVID. The Nats have faced three outbreaks this season. Back in June, the team reported it had reached an 85% vaccination rate. Police say they arrested a man in a movie theater shooting that left a TikTok star in critical condition and killed an 18-year-old woman in California. Cops say the suspect, Joseph Jimenez, has no known connection to either of the victims. The shooting happened Monday night in Corona, about 40 miles southeast of Los Angeles, but nobody knew right away. Workers say they found the victims when they were cleaning up the theater after a showing of the Forever Purge. Investigators say they still have a lot to learn. They don't know things like how long the victims were there before the workers found them and whether anybody else was in the theater when it happened. And they say they do not know whether the shooter had a motive. Police say they do know the theater sold 6 tickets for that showing, and they're looking for any potential witnesses. The suspect now faces murder, attempted murder, and robbery charges. A record-shattering heat wave is about to descend on more than 100 million Americans, and potential hurricane-force winds, hail, and tornadoes bearing down on another part of the country. Plus, the F-35 jet. The military spent more than $1 trillion developing this new stealth fighter. Now Congress wants to know why it's putting pilots in danger. Developing now, after months of back and forth negotiations on infrastructure, there is actually major movement on Capitol Hill tonight. Just minutes ago, the Senate voted to move forward and start debate on a bipartisan infrastructure package. after the White House and a group of senators reached a deal earlier today. Among those voting yes, the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, who blocked debate just last week. This bipartisan package is the so-called physical infrastructure bill, with funding for things like roads and bridges. A bipartisan group of senators is holding a news conference right now. These are live pictures after that vote. President Biden also pushing to pass a separate multi-trillion dollar package for human infrastructure, with massive spending for things such as a daycare and other social programs with or without Republican support. 56 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. led thousands of people on a march for voting rights from Selma to Montgomery. Today, a new generation of voting rights activists began their own march in Texas. The Poor People's Campaign is marching 27 miles over 4 days to Austin, the state capital. They're demanding action on Capitol Hill as the Republican-controlled states across the nation, including Texas, pass voting restrictions.
And 56 years later, we got less voting rights than we had 56 years ago. They could do this tomorrow. It's the filibuster, and it could be ended tomorrow.
Well, the marchers are calling on the Senate to pass the For the People's Voting Rights Bill. But because of that filibuster that he mentioned, it's essentially doomed to fail without 10 Republican votes. President Biden signing a memo today to strengthen cybersecurity of U.S. infrastructure like oil pipelines and electrical grids. That memo orders Homeland Security to develop cybersecurity goals for critical sectors. It also creates a voluntary partnership in which government gives new tools and tech to companies in critical sectors. And as the White House urges companies to get more involved, we're getting a new report on the high price that corporate America is paying for hacks. Our senior Washington correspondent, Eamon Javers, now. Eamon?
Shep, some fascinating numbers for you tonight. This is the 17th year that IBM has done their data breach report, and the findings this year are bad news for companies on the receiving end of all these cyber attacks. The company found that the average cost of a data breach is up 10% just from last year, and in this weird pandemic era, that remote work was a big new driver of vulnerability. Remote work was involved in breaches of 17.5% of the companies they looked at. Those remote breaches took more time to chase down and cost just over $1 million more to fix, too. And which industries had the highest costs from all those attacks? Well, healthcare took the top spot on the list, where it has usually ranked in this survey, followed by finance, pharmaceuticals, technology, and energy. And here's an interesting statistic on ransomware, which we've all heard so much about recently. The average total cost this year is $4.6 million, and that's not including paying the ransom itself. IBM is reminding us here that costs from a ransomware attack to a company include everything from detection, escalation, and notification to lost business and the post-breach response. And all of that stuff is getting very expensive, Shep.
Seems to be. Eamon, thank you. House lawmakers calling on the Pentagon to investigate why fighter pilots are having breathing problems on board the F-35, the military's new trillion-dollar stealth fighter jet fleet. A subpanel of the House Armed Services Committee is pushing the Defense Department to examine and fix potential issues with that F-35 and the breathing system on board. A NASA study found the flow of oxygen to F-35 pilots was unpredictable and changed with every single breath. In 2017, the Air Force grounded F-35s at a base in Arizona after pilots suffered hypoxia-like symptoms. The F-35 program, already facing serious scrutiny from lawmakers because of its massive price tag. It's said to be the world's most expensive weapons system ever. The F-35 costs around $36,000 per hour to fly. Fancy a little seafood? Restaurants are coming up short. The reason they're being forced to scale back. And if that news isn't hard enough to stomach, wait until you hear what the heat is doing to shellfish in Washington State. Backyard swimming pools. You don't have one? You can rent one. The Airbnb-type service that's making a splash. Seafood is disappearing from menus all across the country because, frankly, it's becoming too expensive to serve. Bloomberg News reports restaurant owners are seeing a massive spike in prices, and that's forcing them to pull it from their menus. Items like scallops and Alaskan halibut are largely gone. The problem, say the experts, is port congestion and not enough fishermen or truck drivers. At the same time, demand for seafood is skyrocketing. The shortage comes as health officials in Washington state are warning everybody, don't eat raw shellfish. They say high temperatures and low tides are likely to blame for an infection outbreak that sickened dozens of people. That infection is caused by a bacteria found naturally in the ocean, but the heat and the low tides can cause it to grow more quickly, and that increases the chance of infection. Meteorologists are warning of a possible derecho forming in the upper Midwest and Great Lakes region. A derecho is a high-impact wind storm that could bring hurricane-strength winds, large and destructive hail, and tornadoes. Several thunderstorms expected to develop in that region tonight. Contributing to all of that, a massive heat dome that stretches across most of the middle of the country. 108 million Americans baking today with the heat index, the feels-like temperature, topping 100 degrees. 43 million under a heat alert, with highs at 10 to 15 degrees above average for this time of year. One way to escape all that heat? Take a dip in someone else's pool. You can do that with Swimply. It launched last summer when public pools shut down because of COVID, leaving millions of Americans sweltering with no relief. The platform lets homeowners rent out their pools like Airbnb for houses. So what happened to Swimply this summer? CNBC's Diana Olick with the latest. Hey, Diana.
Hey, Shep. Yeah, we first met the entrepreneurs behind Swimply last year when they launched their new pool rental app nationwide. Demand was both immediate and immense. This summer, of course, public pools are open again. But demand for rentals hasn't cooled off at all. In fact, it's gone right off the deep end.
The amount of hosts on the platform have tripled.
24-year-old Swimply co-founder Bunim Laskin thought his new pool rental company would help homeowners cover some costs during COVID and give relief to those shut out of public pools. But this summer,
with restrictions being removed, people are a lot more comfortable hosting. People are a lot more comfortable not just going with their own family, but with other families and with other friends.
After its remarkable debut, Swimply raised $10 million from eager investors and is now able to offer owners property insurance. That was a game changer. It's now seeing nearly five times the revenue from a year ago. The number of hosts surged nearly 350% to 15,000, and the number of users jumped over 400% to about 500,000.
Were you surprised at how much demand there was for your pool?
I was shocked. It was to the point where it didn't matter whether it was a weekday or a weekend, the bookings were just coming back to back.
Gurbani rented her Potomac, Maryland pool last year on Swimply, mostly to families. Now, requests are coming in from all over. She just had a booking for a photo shoot, and she's rented for parties, baby showers, even wine tastings. All of it netting her tens of thousands of dollars.
Some owners in Swimply are earning over six digits this year, and I just never saw it being able to be such a powerful source of income for a lot of owners.
But why would someone with a luxury home like this rent out their pool?
I feed off of their enjoyment and their happiness.
So you don't do it for the money?
Mm-mm. It's a nice added perk, but no.
Now, Gurbani also has an artisanal pizza business, so you can have poolside pizza if you want. Probably a little heavy for the yoga class renting the pool right now. Swimply is now expanding to homeowners who want to rent their tennis courts, home theaters, home music studios, even a turtle farm, whatever that is. But you name it, they will rent it. Shep?
What happens when you have to go to the bathroom?
Good question, right? Everyone always asks that. About 90% of Swimply hosts will offer bathroom access. Some of them have some outdoor bathrooms, and Swimply will also facilitate getting what's called high-end porta-potties if you want. And so if you need it, you can probably get it.
Diana, thanks. Med school, it's hard work. So is training for the Olympics. Lee Kiefer did both and made history at Tokyo. We'll hear from the future doctor and current gold medalist back on the strip. And on CBC tonight, the women's team foil. Don't know what that is? You will. We have a fencer to explain. Tokyo 2020, and minutes away from our primetime Olympics coverage right here on CNBC. Tonight, double sculls rowing as the women of Team USA look to bring home the gold. Then the wait is over. The BMX racing competition officially begins. Then later, women's team fencing, the U.S. facing the host nation, Japan. Competing tonight, Team USA fencer Lee Kiefer. You may remember her. She made history on Sunday, and her reaction was pure gold.
And a gold medal for Lee Kiefer and the United States.
It was pretty amazing, the 27-year-old becoming the first American ever to win gold in individual foil. And if meddling isn't enough, Kiefer is also a med student. Her husband also fences, and both are studying medicine at the University of Kentucky. After a tough loss 5 years ago in Rio, Kiefer says she was ready to hang up her foil, and then she took one more lunge.
I was actually planning on retiring after Rio.
And Kiefer now out of breathing room. And that's it. She's now out of the Olympics as well. Liu Yangshi of China, 15-9 against Lee Kiefer, who had such high aspirations in Rio.
For the reasons of medical school, and my husband was going to retire, so that was very emotional for us. But then we decided to make one last push for Tokyo. And I love the sport and I love the people so much that just thinking about retiring and these games really put me to tears. Oh, I cry easy. I was crying just thinking about retiring earlier. I'm so rich. When I was younger, I hated to lose. My fiery temper drove me for the first 3 years of my career. I was having success with it, but it's only when I started making more friends, my skills got a little more refined, that I started enjoying the sport more. After the Beijing Olympics, the women's foil team actually retired. Suddenly, I rose to the top as a very young, inexperienced fencer, and from there that gave me the opportunity to develop more than a lot of people would have at my age. When I was competing in London for the first time on the Olympic stage, I felt paralyzed walking out onto the strip. There were all the lights. I could see my family in the crowd. There were so many cameras everywhere. And I started fencing and I felt like I was frozen but also shaking, two things I didn't want to be. But once you get over that shock, you're just excited and honored to be there. Making the Olympic team is a process. It takes consistency, it takes grit, it takes resilience, but I was able to keep on dreaming for Tokyo.
She is one touch away from a bout with gold. There's a touch for Kiefer, and now it is official. She's moving on to the gold medal bout in women's individual foil.
Gold.
The magnitude and the emphasis that people put on it helps you just appreciate everything in life that's really beautiful.
It is the gold medal bout of women's individual foil between 27-year-old Lee Kiefer of Lexington, Kentucky, and Ina Deraglazova, fencing for the Russian Olympic Committee.
I don't want to overthink. A lot of times I focus on my energy. I love fencing as a sport itself. I love the movement. I love being able to be creative and have that physical and mental intensity at practice and competition.
Fourth tie of the bout, and the point goes to Kiefer, 13-12. Kiefer needs one touch for a gold medal. A gold medal for Lee Kiefer and the United States.
Oh, man. Nzinga Prescott now, a two-time Olympic world champion fencer herself, former teammate of Lee Kiefer's. Nzinga, I saw you watching that. You were smiling ear to ear.
Yeah.
Lee's my girl.
Yeah, they're really tight. She almost retired after Rio, you know, stuck with it to win in Tokyo. What did that moment mean to her, and how big a breakthrough was that for USA fencing?
Yeah, we have such long careers. Lee's been fencing since she was 7, like me. I started when I was 9. So it's been 20 years, and in those 20 years, you're going back to the drawing board constantly. There's so many iterations of solutioning and trying to make yourself better, make your game better. How do you become a better competitor on the strip? There's so many factors involved in fencing. And so when she came out victorious, I'm sure she feels so satisfied and grateful, because in sport, there's no guarantee you're going to come out with, you know, the crown jewel. You know, very few people come out with the Olympic gold medal. That's what everyone is vying for. So I'm sure she's so proud of herself, because you really have to believe in yourself too. And that's another process. So I'm so proud of her. We're also proud of her. And we're just really excited.
So I mean, watching her, I mean, it seems like she's got everything. She's got a gold medal. She's a med student, a whole life ahead of her. It's really incredible. You know, training for the Olympics during the pandemic, that's got to be so hard, especially for fencers. You know, it's an indoor sport. You need gyms and equipment and an opponent. That had to have been a huge challenge.
Yeah, I'm sure. A lot of my teammates in New York, where I'm based, were also really challenged at that point. Luckily, she lives with her husband, who's also a star fencer, and they train together. So I'm sure that, like, you know, was a benefit. But yeah, I'm sure, like, not having competitions for a whole year and entering competitions, and then they had one World Cup and then they were at the Olympics. So getting back into that, like, intense mode of being, like, beating people and battling with people is not easy. So
I'm glad
she was able to pull it off, because this was her moment.
For sure. And fencing coming up right here on CBC tonight, women's team foil quarters and semis. What are you going to be watching for?
Well, I'm going to definitely be watching the USA. They're fencing Japan. Japan is a really young team. They're really skillful. Like, similarly, like what she was saying, when she was growing up, she was really good, but inexperienced. That's similar to their team. They're on their home turf, so I'm sure they're pretty excited. But our team, we have a lot of vets. We're really experienced. We have a lot of confidence. We have good ranking coming in. We've medaled at the last 3 World Championships.
Yeah.
I was on those teams. sadly, I'm at home now, but I'll be cheering them on. And you should be looking for a lot of beautiful attacks. Foil is so graceful. Our team is very powerful. Yeah. You'll see a lot of yelling, a lot of celebrating, a lot of hugging, maybe some crying, a lot of love. That's really the, like, biggest component in the team event, just to support your team.
Can't wait to watch it. Nzinga Prescott, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. And if you're just tuning in for rowing or BMX cycling, hope you'll be with us tomorrow for the news on CNBC, 7 Eastern. But it's time to let the games begin. CNBC's primetime coverage begins right now. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.